Out of Time's Abyss by Edgar Rice Burroughs. Chapter 1. This is the tale of Bradley after he left Fort Dinosaur upon the west coast of the great lake that is in the center of the island. Upon the fourth day of September 1916, he set out with four companions, Sinclair, Brady, James, and Tippet, to search along the base of the barrier cliffs for a point at which they might be scaled. Through the heavy Caspakian air, beneath the swollen sun, the five men marched northwest from Fort Dinosaur, now waist-deep in lush jungle grasses, starred with myriad gorgeous blooms, now across open meadowland and park-like expanses, and again plunging into dense forests of eucalyptus and acacia, and giant arboreous ferns with feathered fronds waving gently 100 feet above their heads. About them, upon the ground, among the trees, and in the air over them, moved and swung and soared the countless forms of Caspak's teeming life. Always were they menaced by some frightful thing, and seldom were their rifles cool. Yet even in the brief time they had dwelt upon Caprona, they had become callous to danger, so that they swung along laughing and chatting like soldiers on a summer hike. "This reminds me of South Clark Street," remarked Brady, who had once served on the traffic squad in Chicago, and, as no one asked him why, he volunteered that it was because it's no place for an Irishman. "South Clark Street and heaven have something in common, then," suggested Sinclair. James and Tippet laughed, and then a hideous growl broke from a dense thicket ahead and diverted their attention to other matters. "One of them behemoths of Holy Writ," muttered Tippet, as they came to a halt and with guns ready awaited the almost inevitable charge. "Hungry lot of beggars, these," said Bradley, "always trying to eat everything they see." For a moment no further sound came from the thicket. "He may be feeding now," suggested Bradley. "We'll try to go around him. Can't waste ammunition. Won't last forever. Follow me." And he set off at right angles to their former course, hoping to avert a charge. They had taken a dozen steps, perhaps, when the thicket moved to the advance of the thing within it, the leafy branches parted, and the hideous head of a gigantic bear emerged. "Pick your trees," whispered Bradley. "Can't waste ammunition." The men looked about them. The bear took a couple of steps forward, still growling menacingly. He was exposed to the shoulders now. Tippet took one look at the monster and bolted for the nearest tree, and then the bear charged. He charged straight for Tippet. The other men scattered for the various trees they had selected, all except Bradley. He stood watching Tippet and the bear. The man had a good start, and the tree was not far away, but the speed of the enormous creature behind him was something to marvel at. Yet Tippet was in a fair way to make his sanctuary when his foot caught in a tangle of roots and down he went, his rifle flying from his hand and falling several yards away. Instantly Bradley's piece was at his shoulder. There was a sharp report, answered by a roar of mingled rage and pain from the carnivore. Tippet attempted to scramble to his feet. "Lie still!" shouted Bradley. "Can't waste ammunition!" The bear halted in its tracks, wheeled toward Bradley, and then back again toward Tippet. Again the former's rifle spit angrily, and the bear turned again in his direction. Bradley shouted loudly. "Come on, you behemoth of Holy Writ," he cried. "Come on, you duffer! Can't waste ammunition!" And as he saw the bear apparently upon the verge of deciding to charge him, he encouraged the idea by backing rapidly away, knowing that an angry beast will more often charge one who moves than one who lies still. And the bear did charge. Like a bolt of lightning he flashed down upon the Englishman. "Now run!" Bradley called to Tippet, and himself turned in flight toward a nearby tree. The other men, now safely ensconced upon various branches, watched the race with breathless interest. Would Bradley make it? It seemed scarce possible. And if he didn't? James gasped at the thought. 6 feet at the shoulder stood the frightful mountain of blood-mad flesh and bone and sinew that was bearing down with the speed of an express train upon the seemingly slow-moving man. It all happened.